confession time. I love my iPhone, and I know I'm far from alone. This isn't a product endorsement, but a reminder. Apple, one of America's top tech companies, was started by the son of Syrian immigrants. Had people from Syria been banned from entering the U.S., well, you get the picture. This leads me to the question, what do we risk as a country when we shut the door to someone who might be the next Steve Jobs? Peter W. Singer from the New America Foundation just wrote a story about this in Popular Science, and it centered on one example, one man, Chen Shui-sen. Peter, can you tell us about him a little bit?
Sure. So he was born in China in 1911 and then moved to the United States in 1935 to attend MIT to study aeronautical engineering. And he was, to put it bluntly, a genius. He caught the eye of America's leading minds, and he was quickly involved in some of the most exciting aeronautics and engineering programs of that period. And then when World War II began, he joined his new nation in serving it.
And what did he do for the U.S. government?
All sorts of different things. He joined the U.S. government scientific advisory board, and he began to work on projects that ranged from helping the U.S. Army with early ballistic missile guidance technology to he worked on the Manhattan Project, the atomic bomb program that helped end World War II. And interestingly, at the end of World War II, he'd achieved the rank of lieutenant colonel, and he was part of the team that interviewed the Nazi scientists that had been working on the V-2 rockets. This work proved key in the development of both America's ballistic missile program that became a key part of our Cold War strategy, as well as the rockets that would later take us to the moon. And during this period as well, if this wasn't enough, he also wrote the proposal for a winged space plane that was one of the origins of the space shuttle program.
And about this time, the communists took over mainland China. And here in the U.S., there was an anti-communist witch hunt. So what happened to Chen then?
So in 1949, these two things come crashing together. He is named first director of Caltech's famed Jet Propulsion Lab. And then simultaneous to this, you have this Red Scare witch hunt that's going on led by Joseph McCarthy. And similar to today, it has an executive order that kicks off that's trying to screen for, quote, loyalty. But it's ending up being used to persecute people. And it's amazing to look back at this. But what happens is that the fact that 13 years earlier, back when he had been in grad school, he had attended a party, a social gathering that the FBI had suspected was also a meeting of the Pasadena Communist Party. And solely for the fact that he attends this party, his application for U.S. citizenship is denied. He then loses his security clearance, and then he's placed under house arrest for 4 years.
So did they ever find any evidence, the investigators, to justify their suspicions?
No. As Caltech put it in an alumni award that was given to him many decades later in 1979, they said, quote, no evidence was produced to substantiate the allegations. And he and his colleagues in academia, government and industry protested that they were nonsense, end quote. But, you know, it was to no avail in this period when fear of outsiders trumps facts. And despite the fact that, you know, he had made such clear contributions to U.S. security during World War II, had served, clearly would have been a valuable asset moving forward. In 1955, he's kicked out of the country. And I think it's interesting. This is what the head of the U.S. Navy angrily commented back in that period. He said, quote, it was the stupidest thing this country ever did. He was no more a communist than I was, and we forced him to go, end quote.
So what happened when Chen went back to China?
So he's treated as a hero there, and he's quickly put to work in a series of new programs and everything from China's nuclear and missile to space programs. They set up an Institute of Mechanics in Beijing. And basically over the next several decades, he becomes known as the, quote, father of Chinese rocketry. And he works on programs that range from the family of ballistic missiles that actually still target the United States today to the first Chinese nuclear weapons program. And it's then the Long March programs. These are rockets that take China into space, launching both its first satellites and then its taikonauts. And his impact is just so far and wide. You know, Caltech that misses him describes him as, quote, one of the great scientist engineers of the past century. And in fact, even in science fiction, you can see his impact. Arthur C. Clarke, actually in his novel, then made into a movie, 2010, names a spaceship after him. So it's this, you know, powerful and in many ways terrible example of how a short-term and often factless focus on fear of outsiders can end up backfiring on your own national security.
Huh, so did the U.S. kind of create a threat by forcing Chen out inadvertently?
I don't know if we directly created it. We certainly enabled a threat. We both, to put it this way, we both lost one of the top scientific minds of the last century that had already contributed greatly to U.S. security and was clearly going to contribute more. And then in turn, we helped jumpstart this vast missile and nuclear space complex that's still a rival to us today. And I think, you know, where you can link this to the current debate is not every one of those current or future scientists that are being prohibited from coming to the United States or now or the score that aren't going to be coming in the future, not everyone is going to have clearly this same kind of impact, but each and every one of them will be a story of lost opportunity, needless rejection that will have scientific and security effects on us in the short and long term.
But do you think we should still be careful about dismissing the potential security threats they might pose?
No, of course not. And no one's saying that. That's a, sort of like a, you know, this, it's a false flag as much as the false flag discussions of it. If you look at the amount of vetting that people go through, it's amazing. It's a 2-year process. It involves all sorts of different things from background checks to fingerprints to iris scans, you name it. But then the other part is, look, we've been framing this as, in fact, in the Trump executive order itself, 3 different times mentioned 9/11. But if this executive order had been put into place back in 2001, it would not have stopped either 9/11 or any single act of terror in the United States that has occurred since. Period. Fact.
All right. Peter W. Singer is with the New America Foundation in Washington, D.C. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for having me.